Hello, and welcome to episode 78 of Must See Matches, the essentials of pro wrestling as nominated by you. I am Kieran Lefort, and joining me is the man behind Must See Matches, the master of the knife edge chop, Mark Buckledy. Mark, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I feel, by my standards, I feel a little old because I've just realised it's the 9th anniversary of the time that a seagull stole a pasty while it was in my mouth. I was on holiday in Cornwall. I'm eating this, Thai chicken curry pasty. Mm-hmm. I've literally got one hand, so one end of it is in my hand, the other end is in my mouth, and this seagull comes dive bombing in, takes it out of my fucking mouth, and leaves feathers in the hinges of my glasses. It was just like, what the fuck happened?
This was not how I was expecting to open this show, but... I don't know where to go, so I'm just going to barrel on with the match. The match is Kenta Kobashi versus Kensuke Sasaki from Noah Destiny on July the 18th, 2005 at the Tokyo Dome. Allegedly a 52,000 sellout, which Noah, of course, claimed as 62,000 because it's mid-2000s Japanese wrestling.
Supposedly, because they did Departure, which was the Tokyo Dome the year before, supposedly they did 10 million yen less in ticket sales.
Really?
At Destiny than they did at Departure.
Wow.
Because what's interesting, I got some facts from Chris Charlton's Eggshells book, which is, for people that haven't read it, it's a book on all of the matches that took place in the Tokyo Dome up until, it's either the 2018 or the 2019 Wrestle Kingdom.
Excellent. I'm glad you got this because I wanted to read this book and I haven't read it yet.
Honestly, I'll lend it you, mate.
Mm.
2004-2005 was fascinating because it was Noah's financial peak.
Yes.
And it was also one of the few times that New Japan was not the biggest wrestling company in Japan.
Yes.
In terms of revenue. So now these numbers don't quite match up. So, because there was like some funny bits with like when they were doing their accounting years.
Yeah.
But in 2004-2005, New Japan did 1.36 billion yen of sales, which was like one of their weakest years. I think it was their weakest year to that point for a long time. Noah did 1.58 billion yen in sales. So this is one of the few times where Noah was literally the biggest Japanese wrestling promotion.
How many zeros in a billion?
I think it was about $13 million at the time, I think.
Yeah, I've got the XE app open to work out like how much this is, and I haven't put enough zeros on because it's come up as £87,000, and that's definitely not right.
Yeah, it's in the millions, not in the tens of millions.
Yeah,
but the irony is, by this point of Destiny, both Noah and Japanese pro wrestling at the time was shrinking. So the next year. Saw a 25% drop in sales for Noah.
In 2005?
2005-2006 was 25% down from 2004-2005.
In today's money, 16 billion yen is roughly 100 million US dollars.
Oof.
So that would have been more in 2004.
Oh, no, it wasn't 16 billion. It was
1.6. Oh, my God. 1.6. Jesus Christ, I'm terrible at this.
So it was 10 million.
Yeah, fine. That makes way more sense.
Yeah, 1.6 billion.
Come for the matches, stay for the maths.
So basically, this is kind of both Noah's peak and also this is the start of the downslide.
Yeah. It seems like, it's weird, it seems like quite a sharp downslide. It's not an even slope. It drops off.
Mm.
And I have a theory as to why.
Is part of the theory because the heavyweight title match is like fourth or fifth from the top on this card?
I was going to say, it's kind of related to that. Part of my theory is Takeshi Rikkyo is champion.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that did not help
that
at all.
That went over like a fart in a spacesuit.
And it was the first of so many Noah heavyweight runs that basically they terminated Lickety Split out of panic.
They were trying to build for the future but kept picking the wrong people. And I think partly Well, I don't know, but because they tried with Kenta as well later on, didn't they? And like he was like, even though like he's an incredible wrestler, that to be honest, Takeshi Rikkyo isn't.
Yeah,
he was small. He was a junior.
But that was like 5-6 years after this. So
oh right, sorry. In my head, it's closer in time.
Yeah, like no.
My,
so
I get my Noah kind of so becomes the, a bit of a Noah pudding.
So the big let's give this a go. Now I'm working from memory here, so I might get the order wrong. Rikkyo was the first shot. That didn't work. Marufuji was the second chance. And as we discussed with Dylan on the Marufuji versus Kenta episode, that did terribly at the box office and they quickly stopped that.
In between those two, there's also Akira Taue and Jun Akiyama.
Taue was the guy that won it back.
Yeah.
Because, and then Akiyama was the case, let's put it back on even keel.
Mm.
And then they decided Marufuji would win the belt off of Akiyama. But then Misawa beat
Marufuji
to quickly reset things.
Yeah.
Morishima was the next one that they tried.
Yeah, after they'd given it back to Misawa for 18 months.
Yeah. And then they tried the likes of Go Shiozaki, Kenta. I'd argue probably the two more successful were probably Shiozaki eventually, but Takashi Sugiura probably was the one that they didn't expect to do as well as he did.
Yeah.
He didn't exactly rectify the business and he didn't like create a peak, but I think he probably helped stabilize it a little.
Yeah. It wasn't for the lack of trying, but I don't know whatever it was that they did that just the fans weren't interested in picking up on.
Unless it was just the fact that it was those fans that knew the All Japan peak and they loved those guys and they just didn't transfer onto anyone else. If you take Jay, who does the Dragon Gate commentary, makes a very good point that a lot of the Dragon Gate fans are not fans of the promotion. They're fans of a specific wrestler.
That is very true, yeah.
And when that wrestler goes, those fans don't come back.
Yeah, they follow each one as if, you know, that one is a pop star, if you like, you know.
Yeah.
The Madonna fans don't go to the Michael Jackson concerts, if I can use a very, very dated reference. But as you say, like, at this point, Noah is still a hot product.
Oh, yes, very much.
In the ring, in particular, they are consistently putting on some of the best matches in the world. This show alone has 3 matches over 4 stars. Yeah. I think like 03 to 06, Noah in particular, from what I remember, is just awesome in the ring.
Yeah.
Like nobody is touching them. And only like the best, like at the top of Ring of Honor, perhaps.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not just like in one division because you've got the heavyweights, like the likes of Kobashi.
Yeah.
I mean, Kobashi's epic run, Akiyama's capable of putting on a good match. Misawa is still capable at times of putting on cracking matches, and we'll see one of his Noah matches later on the project. So you've got that in the heavyweight ranks, and then in the junior ranks, you've got maybe more towards a bit later, towards like 06 and even pushing it, you've got Kenta, you've got Marufuji, you've got the likes of Kotaro Suzuki, Takashi Sugiura. Then you've got likes when they have the junior tag tournament, which is, I think, 07. And that is probably one of the top 10 tournaments of all time in terms of the quality that those put out. Because you had,
but aren't they already doing like the Diffa Cup junior tag tournaments?
They are, but one of those Noah tag leagues, I think we might have discussed it previously, is just something else in terms of the lineup.
We've only done one Noah match so far, right? It was the first show.
No, we also did Marufuji versus Kenta.
Oh, we did. The other That's one. Right. Yes. So we did Kenta versus Ricky Marvin for the first show, and then Kenta versus Marufuji.
And
that's
that is a very different match to this match, while also there are similarities.
Mm.
Either 2007 or 2008, but they have the likes of the Briscoes.
Mm.
Is it this one? Nope. It's 2007. Sorry, I'm just trying to choose between the two. Yeah, which is Kenta and Ishimori, Atsushi Aoki and Rocky Romero, Brian Danielson and Davey Richards, the Briscoes, Kotaro Suzuki and Ricky Marvin, and Marufuji and some scrub called Kota Ibushi.
There is not what you can say a lot about a lot of those people. There is not one bad in-ring wrestler among them.
No.
That's a hell of a lineup.
The Marufuji and Ibushi versus Kenta and Ishimori match from 2007 from that tournament is magnificent, fast-paced junior heavyweight tag team wrestling. And yeah, so you had the juniors, you had the heavyweights. Yeah. And this is very much about the latter.
Yeah, very much so. Something that helped Noah over here is we had a dedicated wrestling channel.
Yeah.
That was free for anybody who had a satellite dish to watch. And it showed relatively recent Noah every single week with specially recorded English language voiceover intros briefly explaining the history between the participants in each match. To the point where, I'm sure we must have mentioned it before, Noah ran a show here.
Yeah.
In the Sky Dome in Coventry with Misawa on it, with Kobashi on it, with Kenta on it. Yeah, that's got some great matches on it. That's a really good show.
Yeah, we were both at that show in different capacities.
That was the last show I worked in pro wrestling for 10 years, and I still never have been paid for it.
I was not in a position where I should have been paid and didn't get paid. I did go to the semi-infamous Farringdon show the day after.
Oh,
which was a small leisure centre on like the outskirts of Oxford in a small town.
This is not Farringdon, London. This is Farringdon with one R, Farringdon perhaps in Oxfordshire.
Yes, in Oxfordshire.
And I do believe it was a bit of a thank you to Mark Haskins, who had done a lot of promotional work for the Sky Dome show.
Yeah, so it was Haskins' hometown, I believe, at the time.
Yes, that's the important part. Yes, that's where he's from.
And he was in the main event, and it was him and, I'm trying to remember the teams. I think it was him and Bison Smith against Misawa and, I want to say, Kotaro Suzuki.
Quite possibly.
Yeah, so that was such a weird show to be at because you had... You had 15 to 20 travelling smarks and then 100 family fans just watching the likes of Misawa in a leisure centre. And oh, it was such a weird show. But it was a fun time.
Yeah. We have skipped ahead several years here. Yeah. We should plant ourselves back in 2005, where, as far as I recall, both Kobashi and Sasaki are both experiencing a bit of a resurgence.
Yeah.
So Sasaki fell out with New Japan in 2002 after being there. Like, he was a New Japan Dojo guy, wasn't he? Like, he's...
No. That's a funny thing. He was an All Japan Dojo guy.
Oh.
And he debuted in All Japan around 85, 86.
Good Lord.
So what happened in 86? Riki Choshu turned up in All Japan, and when he left, he took Sasaki with him.
Hmm.
So Kensuke Sasaki became a Riki Choshu protege, and part of the issue with like the 2002 to 2005 New Japan split was that was also at the time when Sasaki's relationship with Riki Choshu collapsed for reasons, I think.
Yeah, so he leaves New Japan in 2002 and does a couple of years in Choshu's rubbish World One promotion. I think that's where they fall out. Kensuke then goes freelance, establishing Kensuke Office, his home promotion, which would later be called Diamond Ring. He then goes back to New Japan as a heel freelancer, has a legendary bloodbath with Yuji Nagata, which had to have had some nominations.
Yep, that was nominated.
Yeah. So he does this en route to winning the IWGP title again twice. Then hops to All Japan after Riki Choshu pops up backstage in New Japan again, dropping the title on the way out, obviously, and almost immediately wins the Champion Carnival tournament. He won't become Triple Crown champion for another couple of years. I've just thrown myself off. I now want to call the Ring of Honor six-man title the Triple Clown title. Kobashi, at this point, is just 4 months out from his record-setting two-year reign as Noah's GHC champion, losing it to Rikkyo in March, I think, of this year. Or, this year, I mean 2005.
Yeah, it would have been around March-ish. Yeah.
Both of them are guys that have definitely come out of career slumps, I think. Mm. And this match was announced simply by a graphic on an LED board at a previous show. It comes up, Kenta Kobashi versus, and then a pause, Kensuke Sasaki, and the crowd goes bananas.
Yeah.
So this is the first time they've ever had a match, and this is their only ever singles match.
It's also Kensuke Sasaki's first ever Noah match.
Yes, he does end up in Noah like full-time in 2008, I think.
2008 till 2013 was his Noah heavy run.
Yes.
But this was his first match in Noah. And, I mean, the thing with these two is they are so similar in style at this point. They're both big, massive heavyweights. They're proper heavyweights. If you look at, like, New Japan and their division... That is not what the traditional Japanese heavyweight was meant to look like.
Sasaki, no, don't make me tell the Steve Corino story again.
We won't.
Yeah, like if you had to be a heavy, if you were told to be a heavyweight, you had to be a heavyweight. You had to be a legitimate heavyweight.
And these two felt like it. I mean, Kensuke Sasaki is built like a fridge, even though at points in this match he moves like a fridge filled with helium.
Yeah, so let's talk about the match. So Kensuke rises up through a hatch in the floor of the stage. He's underlit and there's pyro sparking off all around him. He is stock still. He's just in his boots and shorts and he looks like the unveiling of the new Terminator model. The commentator freaks the fuck out at Kobashi using Grand Sword. So I guess he hasn't been using it up to this point, or has been using a different version. But this is like what I think of as the classic version of Grand Sword.
Yeah.
Noah always had great stages for big shows.
Mm.
This one is like a double-decker affair with everybody coming up through the through this slow-motion Rey Mysterio hatch, let's say, in the middle of it, with some somewhat... Welsh looking dragons with unicorn horns on them, like decorating the sides. It looks very cool. We've done a lot of Kobashi on this show so far, including last week. All been All Japan Kobashi. This is our first look at Kobashi Noah edition.
Yeah.
So he is much bigger here and he's in his black and purple trunks rather than the All Japan orange, and wearing his huge and very snuggly looking black and white hooded robe. I always used to laugh at the rope because the hood is so big. When he pulls it up, it practically comes down to his mouth.
Is it worse or better than the AJ Styles flop over your eyes hood?
Oh, it's better than the AJ Styles one. I think because of the size of him, like AJ is not a big guy and it looks like he's just put his dad's hoodie on.
Yeah.
So both of them get monster pops and the crowd are buzzing from before the bell. And they very smartly, as the bell rings, don't go in straight away. Like, they give them a minute to, like, get excited.
Yeah.
But then they don't fuck about. It goes lock up. Kobashi grabs a headlock. Sasaki instantly dumps him with a backdrop suplex.
Yeah.
Like, straight away, like, this is business. Kensuke lays in some stomps, but Kobashi kind of, he no-sells him with a face that says, you do not come into my house and do this to me.
Yeah.
There is a mini chop battle. Then Kobashi hits a back suplex, but Kensuke flattens it with a lariat and they roll out to opposite sides of the ring. They use a few slow motion replays across the course of this match to really add, I think, to the impactful moments.
Oh, they really do.
The first one is this lariat. You have to watch the shockwave ripple Kobashi's back when he gets hit.
Yeah.
These two leather each other in this match.
Oh, yeah, there are times where it's like, yeah, I'll get to it in more details, but you see sweat fly really,
sure
really
do.
Slowly
yeah.
in large quantities.
I know everybody loves that classic shot of evil, bloody Vince McMahon rising up over the apron with the lead pipe in his hand from whatever WrestleMania it is. This here is the shot for me, though. It's on Kobashi, over Sasaki's shoulder with Kobashi pointing at him like, I'm going to kill you, motherfucker.
The crowd's reaction to this finger point is just magnificent because they know that it's like, for Kobashi, basically they know, oh, shit is on.
Yeah, and it very much is on. They get back in. Kensuke challenges to a test of strength. And this is where you can really see how much bigger Kobashi is.
Mm.
Sasaki is on his tiptoes while Kobashi is leaning forwards and he is still taller.
Yeah.
Sasaki wins. But on the next lockup, Kobashi comes out on top, laying in a variety of knees and chops, including what I called the hangman's chop, where he has him like for a reverse neck breaker and then lets go and just chops him across the throat. And two leaping chop drops on the apron.
There's one which is kind of like a standing splash type chop where that is the best indication of the state of Kobashi's knees because he runs the ropes like current day Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yeah. There's his old favorite, his DDT on the floor, and follows up with a plancher that also looked like it contained a meaty forearm to the top of the head as he came down.
Honestly, that was the move that shocked me more than a lot because it's like the thing where a plancher is, yes, you're jumping, but you're taking most of that on your feet.
Mm.
So Kobashi doing that, considering the infamous state of his knees at this point, because
he has already had at least one double knee surgery.
And this is a point where he's not quite there, but his in-ring style has so been focused now towards the chop. Because he hasn't got the mobility he had previously. So he leaned into the chop as a way of, I've got to do something. And that gets so bad that he has at least one elbow surgery because he basically chops his elbow to pieces.
I cannot remember what year it is, but there was a point where he had to take a year off because he opted to have quadruple joint surgery.
Mm.
And don't forget, this is also a man, and I can't remember what point in the timeline is, this guy's recovered from cancer.
So the cancer is actually, I think, a year or two after this because his return from cancer is either 2007 or 2008. I think it's 07.
Right.
But please don't quote me on that. And if I'm wrong, I apologize.
Yeah, we're not Wikipedia. Back inside, Kensuke backs him into a corner to escape a front face lock, lays in some chops and kind of like leaping clotheslines.
Yeah.
And then in a moment I was not expecting, apparently, he thinks he's still in Dragon Gate because Kensuke Sasaki does a top rope Frankensteiner.
Oh, it's so weird. It's like, wait, because it kind of looks like he's going for a superplex almost. Yes.
Yeah.
Because he's almost got his arm over Kobashi's neck and then it's like, nope, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. And it's really nice as well. Like, it's really smooth. He follows this up with a top rope clothesline. And once Kobashi rolls out the ring, a dive off the top of the floor that, as you sort of alluded to, I could only call the falling fridge.
Yeah, it's like a boulder going off a cliff.
It looks so. I likened it to when someone drops a piano out of an upstairs window in an old silent comedy or a cartoon. It's furniture dropped from a great height.
But this is Sasaki doing what he can to make this feel different, make it feel big, make it feel epic.
Yeah. This might be the only time I've ever seen Kensuke Sasaki dive off the top rope to the floor. I cannot think of another time. They get back in, and I think they look somewhat surprised to find themselves in a position for Sasaki to hit a bulldog. Kobashi knows it wasn't hit properly, though, so he smartly kicks out a one so he doesn't look like an idiot. He fighting spirit pops up in Kensuke's face a couple of times after some kicks and wallops him with three chops. And after each one, Sasaki invites him to give him more. Kensuke hits one back. And so it begins the birth of Mark's least favorite spot, the Chuckle Brothers strike exchange.
I mean, this wasn't the first time it happened. I've seen it up to 98. I know I've seen that sequence before.
Okay.
I'm sure it was 98, but I've seen it into the 90s. But this is probably the one spot more than anything else that led to 100, if not 1,000.
Keep going.
10,000 bad imitations.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. And I think it's because it's at the point where the internet is just about good enough to share reasonable quality video files. Yeah. So this gets clipped and it goes everywhere.
But the thing about it, if you watch this, they are so good, considering the length, because it goes for like supposedly 187 chops.
It is 4 solid minutes of nothing but chops. That's the only move they do for the next 4 minutes.
And yet, look at the sheer range of what they achieve with that.
So I made this point here in this match. It makes all the sense in the world.
Exactly. It's the context.
Yes. So Kobashi isn't about to back down to this outsider trying to show him up with his own signature strike in his own backyard. Kensuke, as beautifully described once by Alan Forel, is a dumb jock wrestler. Mm. He is Kensuke strong, you weak, Kensuke pummel until pin.
Yeah.
There is every chance that Sasaki the character doesn't even twig that he's using the other guy's move and he's just plowing ahead with his one plan to chop down this massive tree in front of him. The commentator apparently at this point says, I hope this continues forever. And if he knew the effect it had on pro wrestling...
he probably wouldn't.
Yeah, yeah. So, yes, Kobashi hits an extra hard chop, sending Sasaki into the corner, follows him with the machine gun chops. And when he stops to Ikuso, let's go with the crowd, Kensuke reverses him and does it back to him. Now he's really taking the piss. Now, like, this is the point where he has to realize what he's doing in character. He also stops to pander to the fans and gets reversed. And then Kobashi gets reversed again. So they've done machine gun chops to each other twice in the corner. They stagger back out to the middle and the exchange starts up again. But this time they're slower and more tired. The crowd, however, absolutely love this. It's not a standing ovation, but there are points where the crowd just fires up into an ovation. The referee is egging them on, the two wrestlers, when you see him in the corner. The sweat spray, as you alluded to them, coming off them is crazy.
I have a casual friend, and he's a casual wrestling fan. He's not a casual friend, he's a casual wrestling fan.
Okay.
and one of the things he loves most is basically wrestlers just chopping the shit out of each other. Mm-hmm. And he refers to this as titty mist. And this is the biggest cloud.
I wish I hadn't taken a mouthful of water for you.
Biggest
said that.
Clouds of titty mist you've ever seen in your life.
For some variety, Kensuke tries a running chop but gets caught and goes back to plan A. The other thing, apart from titty mist, is you can see the blood vessels popping up through Sasaki's skin.
The state of Sasaki's chest here is horrific at times. They have really put everything in. But the thing I love about this chop exchange is it's dynamic. It's not two guys staying in the same position. At the early stages, they're essentially circling each other around the ring as they chop. Their chops are basically used to push each other across the ring. So when they go into the corner, they don't go into the corner because someone's whipped in there. Kobashi does an extra hard chop and Sasaki staggers into the corner.
Yeah.
So the details and the logic behind this is there's a lot more detail and thought that's gone into this than you would expect.
Yeah.
I've actually got a couple of quotes from Kobashi about this, if that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Second best thing to get him on the show.
This is from Chris Charlton's Eggshells again, these translations. So in 2014, he actually said that he kind of regretted this. He said, I watch that now and think, how long are we going to keep hitting each other? But but by 2017, he's kind of changed his mind. And I love this quote because I think it actually sums it up for me. It's absurd. We chopped each other 187 times, but the absurdity, the drama in the absurdity is the heart of pro wrestling in a way. And that's just a lovely quote about pro wrestling.
Yeah. Like you will see this, like every pair of idiots will in every shitty leisure center up and down the country will try this in their matches. This is the match where it means the most. Like this is where it works the best.
Yeah.
Like we said, it's 4 minutes long. Kobashi ends it with a running chop to the throat that he puts all of his weight behind. Yeah. The replay of this looks like a truck going through a brick wall, and you can see his forearm smashes poor Sasaki in the larynx. It's gross. Kobashi somehow also bleeding from the eyebrow, and I've got no idea how, because nothing has been near his face for a good 5 minutes. Kensuke still has just about enough in him to hit a power slam and staggers up to the top rope. Kobashi meets him with a jumping headbutt and takes them both back in with a superplex. And when Kensuke is dumb enough to think he could just get back up and try a clothesline, Kobashi ducks it and dumps him right on his head with a half and half suplex.
The Kobashi half Nelson suplex is a thing of why would you take it?
Yeah.
Because the only thing that you've got a higher chance of landing on your head on is a Kobashi sleeper suplex.
Yes. There is a fantastic close-up. It's from the hard cam zoomed in of a sweating, bleeding Kobashi screaming as he gets back up to his feet. Not that you can hear him over the crowd, though.
This is the Tokyo Dome. This is a venue that has not great acoustics, especially if in the early to mid 2010s, you've got a lot of fans that are into it, but you haven't got enough fans.
Yeah.
Here you've got enough fans because, it's loud.
Yeah. Sasaki takes a second and, despite his dumb jock status, is smart enough to roll under the ropes to the apron. Kobashi goes to get him, and Kensuke tries to hit him with the Northern Lights bomb over the ropes to the floor.
it's pure dumb jockism.
Yeah. Kobashi chops him off the apron and goes out to get him, but Sasaki does indeed grab him off the apron and, being very careful to avoid both the guardrail and the cameraman, I noticed, plants him in the ringside mats with the Northern Lights bomb.
He has him up there for about 5 seconds as well.
Yeah, he is, yeah. And as we mentioned, Sasaki is the smaller of the two here. Cut to an emotionless Akira Hokuto, whose move this is, sitting somewhere in the crowd. She couldn't give a shit. They do one of the best count-out teasers I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Sasaki is back in at 10. Kobashi hauls himself up onto the apron at 16 with Kensuke beckoning him back in, but falls off. He manages to roll back in at 19 with the crowd going nuts. And what really makes it is you can see Sasaki urging him to make it and get back in so they can carry on fighting. He wants to win, but he doesn't want to win like that.
Yeah. Next up is one of my favorite bits of the match, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's Kenta Kobashi fighting not to get Tiger suplexed.
He is and was a frequent opponent of Mitsuhara Misawa. This man has been Tiger suplexed a lot. And if you're going to get Tiger suplexed, you're going to get Tiger suplexed by the master, not this scrub who has come into your company and is trying to do your colleague's move. Yeah. It is a nice Tiger suplex. Like as you said, there's a big struggle. Like Kobashi's trying to keep his arms free and get to the ropes, but Kensuke denies him, hits his Tiger suplex. The bridge is lovely, but Kensuke loses his grip on the arms and very neatly, in bridge position, shuffles backwards a little bit to get the German suplex waist hold on, so he's still in contact for the pin. I really like that.
Yeah.
A murderous lariat also manages only a two count.
Oh, the noise of this thing?
Yeah. We had Dragon Gate Kensuke earlier. We get a little bit of Lucha Kobashi as he manages to reverse the tornado bomb into some sort of arm drag using the leg to get out of it and flip Kensuke over, and hits his own desperation lariat, which gets one of the replays. And the thing about this replay is you can see his bicep hits Sasaki in the chest and then basically just steamrolls up his face as they go down.
Yeah, but you can tell the commentator into it is because when the lariat hits, he just yells a yatta as loud as he can.
Yeah. they yell at each other and charge. Kensuke gets a knee in, the Ipponze and Stranglehold Gamma to try for a submission.
Stranglehold Gamma, one of the worst named submissions ever because it's an armbar, really.
It kind of is. Kensuke has like various Greek letter appended strangleholds. There's alpha, I think there's alpha, beta and delta as well.
Oh, is there a Delta?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a, or is it Epsilon? There are at least three other strangleholds, but Gamma is the one he pulls out the most, even though, as you say, it's kind of an armbar. After Kobashi gets to the ropes, Sasaki goes for a running lariat, but it gets stuffed with a chop and then a spinning chop to the neck. Kensuke, dumb jock, tries to just roar through it and goes for the Northern Lights bomb again, but gets reversed into a brain buster. Still a jump, dumb jock. He pops up and sort of hits the Northern Lights bomb, but Kobashi pops up out of that and they drop each other with simultaneous lariats. And I loved, they come together, they smash together in the middle of the ring, and they both just do the timber fall backwards. Kobashi was very lucky not to smack his head on the turnbuckles, actually.
So that kind of looks good, but also it wasn't that impactful. And then the slow-mo replay, the state of the sweat flying off these two.
It is, to borrow your friend's phrase, it is an explosion of titty mist. It looks like another pyro charge has gone off in the middle of the match. So Kobashi pulls himself up in the corner and Kensuke charges in and cracks him in the back of the head with a lariat. He tries a regular one in the middle of the ring, but gets caught in the sleeper suplex. And Kensuke isn't so good at the backflip, so he just lands right on his turnip again. Burning lariat right under the jaw only gets a two count, as does Kobashi's own piano falling from a great height move, the moonsault. Sasaki tries one last lariat attempt, but it gets blocked with both arms. Kobashi hits five full force spinning back chops to the side of the head, each of which looked like it came with its own free concussion.
Oh, yeah.
And a lariat that made a woman in the crowd scream and gets the pin. Huge Kobashi chances, Grand Sword plays.
Oh, yeah.
Dome is on its feet. I loved watching the crowd in the aftermath. They are going bananas. The seconds rush in, there's the cold spray, there's the ice bags that you get at the end of every Japanese match. The Dome is on its feet as these two get up and they shake hands and hug in the middle of the ring. Despite winning, Kobashi leaves the ring to Sasaki, which I think is a return for Sasaki allowing himself to be pinned without a leg hook.
Oh, yeah, good point.
You'll notice, like, Kobashi is only across his chest for the pin. He's not hooking a leg or doing anything else. Sasaki takes the mic. He thanks Kobashi. He thanks the fans. And I liked in this, we also got the briefest glimpse that our color commentator for this whole match has been Yoshihiro Takayama in one heck of a Hawaiian shirt.
I didn't spot the shirt, but I spotted the platinum blonde haircut on some of the overhead shots earlier. Speaking of spotting in haircuts, did you recognise the American gentleman at ringside for this match?
I didn't. I did see there was a Western ringside attendant. I did see that Kobashi obviously had Kazuhiko Nakajima with it. I recognised some of the Japanese guys with the Kobashi. Who is this man?
Eddie Edwards.
Is it really?
Yes, Eddie
Explains
Edwards.
Why I didn't recognise him. The most ordinary-looking wrestler you've ever seen in your life.
How dare you disrespect Eddie Edwards Edwards.
That tells you everything you need to know. Sometimes I like beautiful wrestling technique. Sometimes I like intricate spots. Sometimes I like inventive gymnastic high-flying or even sports entertainment nonsense. Sometimes I like two lumpy idiots just bashing each other for 25 minutes.
Yes.
So I meant to ask you, actually, when did you initially see this?
2005. It was, or 2006. It was actually close to when it happened.
Sure.
Because of both the aforementioned wrestling channel and also I was a Ring of Honor fan. So I was aware of these kind of things. So if I didn't see it on the wrestling channel, I saw it around the time.
As far as I could find out, this didn't actually air on the wrestling channel for 11 months.
Oh, okay.
The first record I can find of it showing is June the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I when I was formulating this question in my head earlier, the simple little question that it is, I was thinking, this would have been at the point where you're like big into Ring of Honor, discovering all the Japanese promotions and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not actually sure if I've ever seen it start to finish until this week.
Really?
I'd convinced myself I had seen it, but there was so much in it that surprised me. Maybe I had seen it, close to when it happened and just blocked.
You remember the chops and you forget everything else.
That's the bit that, you know, gets a Solariato gif every year on the anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, there is so much more to this match than that spot.
Almost none of it's clever.
No, and that's kind of the point, that you've prefigured my next note. I absolutely love it. It's so brilliantly dumb and unrefined. There is barely any actual wrestling. There's the barest hint of a plan or strategy from either man. It is just two trucks slamming into each other over and over and over until one of them falls on top of the other one for a count of three. Partway through watching it, I came up with a scenario in my head, which is a comedy movie of the family Kobashi living in one house, and next door is the family Sasaki. And the climactic scene of the movie is these two dads finally having enough of each other and having this wrestling match. Possibly on the driveway. Yeah, this is two dumb dads just beating the shit out of each other. And it's fucking brilliant. I love it. It's a must. For me, it's a must-see only because, like me, hopefully, it will leave you with a massive grin on your face.
It's joyous. It really is. I think this is the definition of chops and bombs wrestling, because all they're doing is either trying to beat the shit out of each other or trying to concuss each other.
Yes.
I think it's a shining example of what people think that peak Japanese heavyweight wrestling is.
Yes.
And I don't think there's actually that many matches that are this.
Yes.
Like, if you actually think about it.
This is the most this match.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's like, do you want a dumb match that is just two guys battering each other and trying to just top each other and not want to let the other guy win? And it's just a battle of will and guts and stupidity. And it just works. I think the point is
they are almost exactly the same character, which is they are thick boys who won't back down.
And it's actually that kind of two people that are the same wrestler. That doesn't always work.
No.
That struggles a lot. Like Walter, for example, who is a wrestler that kind of wrestles maybe a little similar to this, he has infamously never been good against heavyweights because he needs that size balance.
Yeah.
It's like, I think two different styles in a match probably does work better than two guys of a similar style. This is probably one of the best examples of a match where you've got two guys who are almost exactly the same and they make it better than the sum of the parts.
Yeah, it is the immovable object meeting the immovable object.
Yeah.
This is 4.75 stars in Wrestling Observer Newsletter, 9.68 as we record this on Cage Match. This is not the main event of this show. Mitsuhara Misawa and Toshiaki Kawada had to follow this and only managed 3.5 stars and an 8.54 respectively.
And that was the first Kawada versus Misawa match for 5 years.
Wow.
Because the last one was in 2000, which was the year, and then the Noah split happened. And then this was Kawada coming into. And if I remember correctly, I think this show was broadcast on live Japanese TV.
I was doing a bit of Observer reading. It wasn't live. I think it was either later that night or at the weekend in a cut down, like 2.5 hour version, because it's a 4 hour plus show.
Okay.
But this was one of three matches that were shown in full on that broadcast.
Yeah. The reason I'm saying that is because I kind of remember a story that Kawada did a promo that he wasn't supposed to after the match and actually pissed people off, and that was why he didn't come back to Noah until after Misawa had passed away.
I see. Okay. In the Observer Awards, Kobashi took Wrestler of the Year for the third year in a row. I told you he was in the in a renaissance. Beating out second place Samoa Joe by a ratio of more than 2-1.
Jesus.
He was second in most outstanding, where he went lost to Joe. Noah won promotion of the year. This match came third in match of the year behind Kurt Angle versus Shawn Michaels, which we've already covered.
Yeah.
And winner, Samoa Joe versus Kenta Kobashi, which we will get to.
Put it this way, about 2005, No other year has as many matches in the top 104 than 2005. There are seven.
To show what a banner year it was for match quality, of the top six in the Wrestling Observer Reader Awards for Match of the Year, we've now covered four of them and have two to go.
Yeah.
Both of which contain Samoa Joe.
Yeah.
Fun stat, also from that Observer Awards, in 2005, Kobashi had the highest nominated match in Japan, which was this one, the highest nominated match in the US, which was the one against Joe, and the highest nominated match in Europe, which was him and Go Shiozaki versus Jun Akiyama and Doug Williams from Universal Uproar in Coventry.
Jesus.
Which I was at.
Three of the continents. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, 2005 was the year. It was the year of Kenta Kobashi, and yeah, as we will get to, the year of Samoa Joe.
Oh, it's just an incredible, incredible year. And so Kensuke Sasaki, let's at least give him a little bit of credit.
I totally forgot about this. Yeah. So this is the only time we're going to be talking about him, isn't it?
Yeah. So
one of his matches anyway.
He had eight nominations, mm-hmm, and one of them is, if you watch this, I then recommend watching this other match I'm going to mention, which is Kensuke Sasaki and Katsuhiko Nakajima versus Kenta Kobashi and Go Shiozaki from November 2005. Because that is incredible as well. That is well worth your time.
When I was doing my how many times have these two been in the ring together research, I saw that and I immediately went, ooh, I'd like to see that.
That is well worth your time.
There is also a 30-minute draw where Kenta replaces Shiozaki, which I think is the next year or maybe a little after that. So apart from this, I can't remember if you said it at the top of the show, they have only ever wrestled in tag matches against each other.
Yeah.
28 times, I do believe, 23 of which they are opponents. The other five, obviously, they're on the same team, including Kobashi's final match, eight-man match, where his team contained Kensuke Sasaki.
Yep. Another nominated match between these two, which, again, I would highly recommend, is an August 2008 4-versus-4 survival tag match with the Noah team of Akihiko Ito, who no one remembers, Atsushi Aoki.
I think you just made him up.
Atsushi Aoki, Kenta, and Kenta Kobashi against the Diamond Ring foursome of Takashi Akita, who is like one of the Diamond Ring guys everyone forgets.
Mm-hmm.
Kento Miyahara, whatever happened to him.
Who everybody forgets is a Diamond Ring guy.
Katsuhiko Nakajima and Kensuke Sasaki, and that is a barn burner as well.
Yes.
The other nominations are the aforementioned Nagata Bloodbath match, a 2000 match against Kawada at one of the Tokyo Dome shows for New Japan. It is a tag match with Hiroshi Hase against the Steiner Brothers at Starrcade 91. And two Florida Brothers matches.
Yeah.
And I think I nominated one and you might have nominated the other.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. So if that is everything, I guess I should launch into all the plugs and stuff. If you do not subscribe to this show, why do you not subscribe to this show? You should go to linktr.ee/mustseematches to subscribe and get the full list of nominations and all of that stuff. You should go to our Discord, which is bit.ly/... I can't remember. I'm doing this without the note open. I can't remember what it is. Hold on. Shit, I thought I could get through it. bit.ly/mustseematches Discord. You can have a chat over there. I am at, I haven't done all the socials. We are at Must See Matches on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. On Twitter, I am at Kieran Edits, and Mark is
at Monkey_Buckles.
I also heartily recommend that you, firstly, listen to our bonus episode that we released earlier in the week. Eamon Bell came on, and we talked about something we think is a Must See Match from this year, which is Fuminori Abe versus Takuya Nomura from We Are Fighting Detectives on October the 12th, 2023. That was tremendous fun to watch and record. And I have another podcast, which is called Nothing and Like It, which is about the history of the Frontier Wrestling Alliance on television. And you can go to linktr.ee/FWAPod to find all the stuff to do with that. Next week, Sarah Flam returns as we head back to New Japan Pro Wrestling for Kota Ibushi versus Shinsuke Nakamura from Wrestle Kingdom 9, January the 4th, 2015. That should be tremendous fun, so make sure you're back here for that. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.